You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Ewan Murray.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Race to Dubai show as we take a look back at the four major championships in 2017 and what a year it was. The drama began back in April when Sergio Garcia mastered Augusta to break his major duck at the 74th attempt.
I feel so nicely surrounded. Obviously, this is something I wanted to do for a long time, but it felt like a little bit of a drama, maybe, obviously with a happy ending.
Another maiden victory was to follow at Erin Hills, where Brooks Koepka took the US Open in spectacular fashion.
That's probably the most emotion I've ever showed coming down the stretch. I mean, it feels amazing, you know, to get my name on this trophy with so many other great names. It's truly an honor.
Then there was joy for Jordan Spieth as he moved a step closer to a career Grand Slam with a stunning win at the 146th Open Championship.
It's in, it's over. Fist bump from Jordan Spieth. He becomes the second player in the modern era to win three majors before the age of 24.
The final major of the year was won by another Jay, Justin Thomas. He produced some incredible golf in getting his hands on the USPGA Championship.
For this to be my first one and have my dad here, and I know Grandpa was watching at home. I was able to talk to him, and that was pretty cool. It's just a great win for the family, and it's a moment we'll never forget, all of us.
We'll hear from all four major winners as we review another unforgettable year of golf in the major championships. Plus, we'll look ahead and make our predictions for the Big Four in 2018. Hi, I'm Robert Lee, and alongside me is Ewan Murray. Ewan, how are you? A magnificent year in the majors.
Absolutely fantastic, but then again, it always is.
Yeah, it always is. And I'm really delighted to say that joining us from the other side of the pond and host of Fairways of Life on SiriusXM and the Golf Channel is Matt Adams. Matt, how are you? You're in fine fettle.
Yes, good day to you, Robert and Ewan. Doing very well indeed. And I echo Ewan's words about the majors this year, including the Open. I thought they were absolutely brilliant, highlighted, I think, by what happened at Royal Birkdale.
Okay, Ewan, your standout moment was?
Jordan Spieth's tee shot at 14, round four.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you, Matt, as well.
Well, I would have to say that the eagle at 15 was absolutely stood alone. That was just something that was remarkable to me.
I think he was remarkable. I think all five of the shots he hit at 13 for me, from the tee shot onwards, all five of them were just incredible. But it was an amazing year. Let's start with the Masters. It will live long in the memory. And after going toe-to-toe with Justin Rose over 18 dramatic holes on a typically stunning final day at Augusta, Sergio Garcia prevailed at the first extra hole in a playoff to claim his first major title some 18 years after bursting onto the scene as a 19-year-old. Garcia and Rose left the chasing pack for dust on Sunday as the two friends traded blows on the fairways of the famous Georgia course. After dropping shots at the 10th and 11th, he saved par at the 13th, birdied the 14th, and then produced one of the shots of the year to make another gain at the 15th. The pair still couldn't be separated from the 16th onwards, and so it went to sudden death, where Garcia capitalised on a wayward Rose drive to win the greatest prize of his career to date. Let's hear from the Spaniard, who says even he was beginning to think that a major victory might elude him.
Where my head was at sometimes, I did think about, am I ever going to win one? You know, I've had so many good chances, and either I lost them or someone has, you know, done something extraordinary to beat me. So it did cross my mind. But lately, you know, I've been getting some good help and I've been thinking a little bit different, a little bit more positive, and kind of accepting too that if it for whatever reason didn't happen, my life is still going to go on. It's not going to be a disaster. But it's happened.
Ewan, were you one of the group who thought maybe, you know, for one reason or another, it just might not happen for him?
I was beginning to think that. You go back to 2007. I don't know why the ball didn't move left to right on Carnoustie's 18th green. Somehow it didn't. It lipped out on the left side and Padraig Harrington walked in there. You still thought there would be an offload of chances for Garcia. His putting was beginning to worry me. Was he as good as the rest of the fellas in the top 10 of the world ranking? Probably not. But, of course, his ball striking has always been supreme. And I was thrilled that after 74 goes, he finally did it.
And for you, Matt, watching Garcia all these years, it's been a frustrating watch because I think you and myself and yourself all sort of felt that way before now, Sergio should have been a major champion.
I mean, when you go to the way before, you could go right back to 1999 at that PGA Championship where he was battling with another youngster in the day in Tiger Woods. And you thought, even though he wasn't able to close out that major championship, you thought that this rivalry had been born, these two young players blooming at the same time on the international stage, and that great things lie in store for Sergio Garcia. But the scar tissue instead built up over the years, time and again, seemingly defying everything, fate itself. And as Ewan just noted there at Carnoustie, it looked as though it would happen. And afterwards, we got a little glimpse that week of the Sergio Garcia that was a bit of a victim of the results that were being forced upon him, compelled upon him. And you started to think, you know what, well, maybe he doesn't have the mental fortitude anymore to close the deal because of the fact that he feels like the fates are aligned against him. That everything came full circle this past spring. And I think this win for Sergio Garcia was as much a win for all of us as it was for him. And the fact that it came on what would have been the 60th birthday for Seve Ballesteros was just amazing. It was just one of those great, great days in the world of sport and certainly in the world of golf.
It sure was. And coming down the stretch, Ewan, Justin already a major champion, Sergio had thrown so many away. Did you feel that Rose had the upper hand?
Not really. It was difficult to separate them. At that point, I was hoping there was two green jackets, one for Justin Rose and one for Sergio Garcia. I agree with Matt. It was one of the great golfing days, one of the great days in the history of the game, that two players who conducted themselves the way they did played golf of that level. And in the end, of course, there is only one winner.
How about, Matt, the way Sergio played the 15th hole, which for so many people has been, you know, you talk about Seve, he stood once there at the top of that hill with Jack down in front, and he just lost his father, dumped a 4-iron in the water and lost the Masters. Sergio did the complete opposite.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think that speaks to, if you could look at that as a microcosm of Sergio's entire career, the fact that he pulled off the shot that he had to hit at the time that he had to hit it, it was majestic. And I honestly think that that could arguably be the shot of all of 2017. It was that dramatic. I thought it was brilliant, too. And I like what Ewan just alluded to as well. The way that both players conducted themselves as gentlemen represented the best of the game. I know in some circles there's this longing that the players will seemingly have this disdain for one another as they come down the stretch. But I think it's even more compelling when players have great respect for each other and conduct themselves as such. And yet at the end, there is, of course, a winner and there is one who did not. And I just thought for all of those elements and the way that Sergio held it together down the stretch, when I think everybody naturally would have been saying, okay, when's the trigger point? When's the point here where we're going to see the Sergio that we've known for the past almost two decades? And it's not going to work in his favor. It didn't happen.
Ewan, it was the first Spanish win at the Masters since Jose Maria Olazabal in 99. And as we saw in Medina in the Ryder Cup, the spirit of Seve had a say there. Do you think the spirit of Seve on his 60th birthday was looking after Sergio Garcia?
I'm not sure I believe in all that, but the more often you see it happening, the more you think you should believe in it. And Seve will always be such a massive part of Europe, a huge part of the European Tour. He didn't get enough opportunities to play in the United States in the early part of his career, whereas the players nowadays, if you're in the top 50 of the world ranking, you can go to America and participate in these majors. Seve had to bang one or two doors down with the help of the likes of Ken Schofield. And of course, once the door opened, he marched straight through. But spirit, I'd like to think so. It's a nice tale.
You like that, Matt?
Yeah, because there's another way, I think, to look at the spirit, and it's the spirit of Spanish golf, that the foundation upon which Seve obviously established. And it is that spirit of the fiery, emotional Spanish players. And we're seeing it in the new young Spanish players that are coming through the ranks right now. And the fact that a young Sergio Garcia had the opportunity to know Seve Ballesteros speaks to the bridges that exist from generation to generation in the great game. So, yeah, I think at the very least, it was a win for Seve in the spirit of Spanish golf, and it carries on in that vein. So, yeah, I thought it was exciting.
It certainly was. Well, if it was ecstasy for Sergio Garcia, then it was certainly agony for Justin Rose. The Englishman, though, says there wasn't much more he could have done to claim a green jacket.
Yeah, I would say this one probably is one that slipped by for sure. I mean, I can't pick holes in my performance. I felt fantastic out there. I felt cool, calm, collected. Could I have made the putt at 17? Of course I could. But, you know, for the most part, I'm not going to second guess one or two shots. I really stepped up. I really felt great. I felt in control. I felt positive. I felt confident. You know, barring a great comeback from Sergio, it was mine to cruise to the house. But, you know, it's not always that easy. I always said, you know, before I won a Merion, you're going to win majors and you're going to lose majors, but you've got to be willing to lose them. You've got to put yourself out there. You've got to hit the top of the leaderboard. There's a lot of pressure out there. And if you're not willing to enjoy it, then you're not ready to win these tournaments. And I loved it out there.
A classy loser, you won on this occasion, Justin?
Without any question. And at the end of that evening, when I left Augusta National that night, I thought golf was the winner. Not just Rose, not just the champion Garcia, but the game of golf was the winner.
Where do you see Justin when you think of all the world's top players, Matt?
Obviously, he's amongst the top players. I thought it very high in that list, in fact. I thought it was interesting, Robert and Ewan, that in that little clip that you picked up there, and they say, well, how do you justify, how do you feel in the wake of the performance you just had not winning? And he immediately brought up Merion. And I think after you are a major champion, that's an armor that these players carry with them. And so having not closed it out here, clearly he's not as devastating as he would have been if he wasn't already amongst those ranks. So that, from that perspective, in looking at the work that he's doing with Sean Foley and the continuance of the swing, I actually think that the veteran campaigner that is Justin Rose is one that you have to keep a very, very close eye on in 2018, because I think he's ready and I think he's poised to win another major championship.
Do you think Justin has a natural game, Ewan, for Augusta?
I think he has a natural game for major championship golf. It's consistent. It's pretty much the same every time he goes out there. He's maturing maybe a bit later than people thought when you think he burst onto the scene at Royal Birkdale in 98 as a youngster there. It didn't happen right away. He had to rebuild his career. And maybe the best of Rose is yet to come in majors, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if he doesn't win one more, he wins two more.
Interesting and very, very probable. Well, 2011 champion Charles Schwartzel rounded off the top three, and sitting alongside Matt Kuchar in his share of fourth was Ryder Cup star Thomas Peters, whose 5-under-par finish was his best at a major to date. Speaking after sharing the lead after two rounds, the Belgian said he'd be lying if he hadn't thought about what it'd be like to slip on the green jacket.
I've hauled the winning putt about a million times. I've watched it my whole life. So as do all of those guys, you know, we've all had that in practice, that winning putt. So hopefully one day.
Well, we'll see how the Thomas Peters season unfolds in 2018. Of course, that's if you're on the PGA Tour, among us right now. And if you're on the European Tour, it's among us right now. Other notable performances came from Paul Casey. He finished sixth on 4-under-par, and Rory McIlroy inside the top 10 at 3-under-par, tied for seventh. Didn't happen for Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler on the Sunday. 75 and 76, Matt, that was surprising.
Yeah, it was. And it's funny that you mentioned Ricky in particular, because I think Ricky is one of these players that people are waiting to break through. I'm not going to say to the same extent, say, of Sergio at the time, because he just hasn't been out there as long as Sergio had been out there. But I do think that it's time for Ricky Fowler to close that gap and to step up on the main stage, not only to contend, but to actually close and to build the bridge between the media darling, such as he is, and competitive play at the highest level at these major championships. I kind of have a sense that he's ready for that, but I think there's many that are watching it very closely and saying now is the time.
How big is the gap between Ricky and the other young bucks who have won majors?
Not that big, but significant, because the other young bucks have a major title, the likes of Koepka, the likes of Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. They have the majors, and that's the pressure on Ricky Fowler right now. You saw the way he closed out Tiger's tournament with a final round of 61. Is he capable? Of course he is, but he has to do it. And the longer that goes on, the more difficult it will become.
And of course, he's got to beat all these other kids who are playing so well at the same time, so it's not easy. Top 10, please, Ewan, at the Masters, please.
Big surprise was there was no Charlie Hoffman, who had a lead of four in the first round, the largest since 1955, when Cary Middlecoff beat Ben Hogan by seven. Tied in ninth place was former champion Adam Scott alongside Ryan Moore. You mentioned Rory McIlroy, two-way tie for seventh with Kevin Chappell. Casey's just outside the top five after a closing 69 and 68 on the weekend. Peters and Matt Kuchar were tied fourth. Schwartzel again with a good weekend, 8 under over the last 36 holes, but really in the end it was a two-horse race and Rose came up second. It was Garcia by a nose.
We're already going to be talking about the Masters. Once it finishes, you've got 12 months before it starts again, but Masters conversations, Matt, continue for 12 months and the conversation that is still ongoing is, will Rory McIlroy win at Masters?
Yes, and it's rightfully so with Rory McIlroy because, as we well know, Ewan just alluded to it when he was speaking about Ricky Fowler and how time tends to build even more blocks of anxiety up to, as a player marches towards, in his case, winning any major championship, the case of Ricky's or in this case with Rory McIlroy. And you do get a sense that when he's on the ground, he kind of gets wrapped up in the emotion. And you wonder, will a victory, which I do think is imminent, a victory for Rory McIlroy, is it best believed to be coming from the back of the pack instead of going out and dominating the way he's capable, as he's shown in major championships where he's one or two strokes behind it? On Sunday, he goes out and closes it and comes behind with the victory to kind of overcome the mental baggage, if you will, if it is, in fact, building up for Rory McIlroy. But actually, I'm quite high on Rory's prospects at Augusta.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. And that's not that far away now as we're into December. It's only a few months away. So to the second major championship, the US Open, it was at Erin Hills in Wisconsin. That was the 117th US Open where Brooks Koepka reigned supreme at an untraditionally low-scoring affair. The American's major breakthrough came after a final day tussle with third-round leader Brian Harman, with Koepka sealing a four-shot victory following a late flurry of birdies. His score of 16 under par matched Rory McIlroy's at Congressional in 2011 as the lowest winning score at US Open. And the former European Tour player says he was immensely proud of his achievement.
I mean, it's pretty special. I look at all these places that I've won. Just won in Japan, I think, in November. And, you know, to win in European Tour and in Turkey and Phoenix. I mean, you look back at all the wins, even on the Challenge Tour. It's pretty cool to look at all. I'd love to get a map and just start looking at all the places I've won. It's pretty cool. But to win, you know, my first major, you know, in the United States is pretty special. And, you know, like it is Father's Day. So hopefully, I didn't get him a card. So I really hope this works. I don't get too nervous. I don't really think too far ahead usually. And to be honest with you, this week, I don't think I ever got nervous. Not at one point. It's one of those things. I just stayed in the moment. And I thought that if I thought ahead, if I strayed from the game plan at all, that I thought that's where things were going to kind of go wayward and sideways. And you start thinking ahead, you start thinking about having the trophy or start thinking about other things. I mean, you're here to play golf. It's just gut it out for that long and then you can celebrate.
You know, Matt, golf is an amazing sport because it's so all-encompassing. There are so many aspects to it. And you've got guys like Spieth who are super thinkers. There's nothing that's left unturned. Then you've got guys like Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka that just kind of get on that surfboard and ride the wave. They're amazing.
That's true. And it's interesting because they are both good friends and they exercise and work out together. And yet they still have the same approach where step up to the ball, smash the ball a mile, find the ball and smash it again. And it was one of those weekends where that power and that philosophy just merged and he was absolutely unbeatable. You know, we do this a lot in the world of sports, certainly, but in particular in the world of golf, where a player will come through, they'll do something that seemingly is so dominant that we are all convinced that this player will never not win again. Anytime they tee it up, they will close the deal. But it was the fact that he did it, Erin Hills, a course that nobody had any real knowledge of, any real experience on, and was able to do it as well as he did now. A lot of people will complain, and you alluded to it as well, Robert, this idea that it was a low-scoring affair, and to say, well, you know, part of what he did was accountable to the golf course and to the scoring opportunities he had. Well, everybody had those same scoring opportunities, and I could tell you the way that he was hitting the golf ball, if they had narrowed the fairways and if it was running harder and faster, he still was hitting the fairways. That's what was so impressive with the power that he displayed off the tee. It was really quite remarkable.
And how amazing, Ewan, was he that as a player who hadn't won a major yet, hadn't won that many times, the quality of golf that he produced, and the fact that he just kept going forwards. He never looked over his shoulder or wobbled at all.
Take nothing away from Koepka, and as Matt quite rightly says, it's the same for everybody. For someone who hits the ball as far as he does to take a driver as often as he did, yes, of course he was going to go into these greens with plenty of loft in his hands, and he got the game plan right, he played his very best golf over the course of the 4 days, and in the end he was a worthy champion.
And do you think, Matt, he's established a blueprint for up-and-coming young American players? Come over here, play Challenge Tour, step up to the European Tour, and eventually get back to your home tour?
Yeah, I think if you're so inclined to do that, I think it takes a particular individual that can embrace the fact that you're going to be in different countries and different cultures. You even heard when he was doing the interview, he said, when I won, I think in Japan, wherever he was, said it was, he didn't even know where he won. It was only a few months before, and it shows you the global player that he is. The story of what he did, and the same thing with Peter Uihlein that he's trying to accomplish from taking the same path by going to a global stage, I think it's a brilliant way for players to cut their teeth. However, I don't think it will work for everybody. I just think the fact that they were able to accomplish it and the way that they were able to accomplish it will harden a player and make him capable of playing on a global stage anytime, anywhere.
We're used to you and Hideki Matsuyama playing well in major championships. He tied Brian Harman, who had a great week, the left-hander.
Wonderful week for someone who was probably 40, 50 yards behind the eventual champion off the tee. He had to play a different type of course, and so often in the course of the last 8, 9 holes, he had a utility club in his hand where some of the other bigger hitters were having an 8, 9 iron to a green. And of course, very much easier to attack the pin when you've got that loft in your hands. But brilliant performance from Harman, courageous performance. And I think he won many friends throughout the course of the 4 days in Minnesota.
And Matt, how much progress is he continuing to make on the PGA Tour?
He's a fiery player. He can be a little bit streaky as a player as well. Again, when you look at the performance that he had at that U.S. Open, you know, a lot of people forget that he was leading after the third round. I think it's something that's going to be a maturing process for him as he continues to march on. I do think that it has to be the right type of golf course for him to win on, because he's going to be challenged against some of the bigger hitters that are playing. But we have plenty of venues that he could play on. I'm not just talking about major championships. I'm talking about week in and week out on the PGA Tour. There are still plenty of venues that a player like that, that's not hitting as far, but has both the fortitude to compete, this kind of grit that he carries with him, almost a chip on his shoulder, and the ability to work the golf ball the way that he has. I'm thinking like Colonial, for example, or at Sea Island, Sea Island with the RSM, or at Hilton Head, and courses like that, where you've got to be able to work the ball in kind of the old school way. I do think he's capable of being a multiple time winner on the PGA Tour.
And of course, just recently played the QBE shootout. Brian Harman, quite hot between the ears. Ewan chose Pat Perez as a partner.
Well, if he wasn't hot between the ears, he is now after 4 days with Pat Perez. But we talk about Brian Harman, just a word on Pat Perez. It was a pretty good year for him as well.
Yeah, he plays some really good stuff. And we saw him in, where were we at the end of the year? We were in a nice steakhouse, and Pat was there with the family, and they all had the peak caps on. It was quite a different look. Not one you'd see Matt Adams doing, that's for sure. Now, the US Open also saw a sign of what was to come in 2017 from Tommy Fleetwood. The Englishman's fourth place finish was his best ever performance in a major.
I've never contended for a major before. So when you get to Saturday and Sunday, you've got to see how you react and how you feel. And I felt, yesterday I played great. Today my game wasn't quite there, but still, you know, got it round in level par. I had to scrap a little bit for it. And it was a bit tough today, but, you know, I felt fine. I felt comfortable. I enjoyed playing late on Saturday and Sunday. And next time, whenever that comes, that I play well enough to get myself in contention, I know that inside myself I feel fine, and I can, whether I play well or not, that's a different story, but I feel fine.
Matt, have you enjoyed watching Tommy Fleetwood this year?
I greatly have. I know we'll be talking about the Open coming up, and I so enjoyed, and I have for some time with Tommy, because as you gents know, he's such a good person. He's so much fun to be around. And I love the way that he just said in that soundbite that he had to scrap his way around, because 4 under collectively on the weekend at the U.S. Open, he is that kind of a player that grinds it out. Beautiful ball striker. I love the way that he has handled himself on the global stage now, because he can't sneak up on anybody anymore. Tommy Fleetwood play the way he has been. I think he's one of those fun international players that the better that the world gets to know him, the more and more they're going to like him.
Isn't it amazing, Ewan, that Tommy changed coaches and he got lost with it? He was at sixes and sevens, really. Then he goes back to his original coach, I don't know, guessing 18 months ago, something like that. And since then, the trajectory has been stellar.
Well, scientific teaching doesn't work for everyone. And quite simply, that was the case for Tommy, who very nearly lost his card on the European Tour 3 years ago, and had to go to South Africa and have a top 10 finish to keep his playing privileges. That's been the rise of Fleetwood. But, you know, he looks as comfortable up there at the top as he was disappointed down the bottom. And that's what I like about Fleetwood. Nothing has changed in his world. He's just become a better golfer.
Yeah, he certainly has. And Matt, for American golf fans, Koepka, Harman, Fowler, Haas, Schauffele, Hoffman, Mullinax and Snedeker are all inside the top 10.
Yeah, and everyone that you mentioned there, by and large, are capable of hitting the ball a long way, save for the conversation we had with Brian Harman. So I can't tell you I'm particularly surprised by it, but we had a conversation earlier about Ricky Fowler knocking on doors again. There he is, high up on that leaderboard. Ewan mentioned Charlie Hoffman, and the knock against Charlie Hoffman is he's got to close when he gets down to the final chapters of the novel. And so, yeah, I can't tell you that I'm surprised by that leaderboard and the way that it finished up, because that particular event, that championship, that U.S. Open was by and large about power. There was obviously some finesse that snuck in there, but by and large, it was about 80-90% of that list you gave was just about hitting it a very, very long way to start.
Do you think, Ewan, it may be some time before we see a 16 under par winning score at US Open?
In our lifetime, we may never see that again, I think. They're going back to Shinnecock next year. That's back to tried and tested and hallowed ground, the hallowed ground of the Indians there. And Shinnecock will be much more of a test for every player. Long driving there doesn't mean an awful lot. Shinnecock is an old-style course where it's position A to B. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's the way the USGA like it.
Yeah, they do. I rather gave away your top 10, but it's worth repeating.
Well, you missed one out, actually. There was a three-way tie for ninth. Justin Thomas, much better things were to happen for him in the months ahead. Brant Snedeker and Trey Mullinax. Charlie Hoffman in eighth place, not a bad weekend, 68-71. And Xander Schauffele, this was the start of the Rookie of the Year's move to win that title and a bigger one at the end of the year. Bill Haas and Ricky Fowler were tied fifth. Tommy Fleetwood in fourth place at 11 under par. Harman and Matsuyama, who would have been the first Japanese player to win a major, couldn't be separated at that 12 under par total. But this was a week that belonged totally to Brooks Koepka.
And Matt, you might remember the three wood that, I don't know, it was a 300 yard plus three wood that Justin Thomas hit into a par five and hold the putt for an eagle. It was staggering. You know what hole it was. I can't remember.
He was 18.
He went three wood, actually, Robert. He was three wood off the tee on a par five that extended in excess of 600 yards. Three wood from there to secure his eagle and firing a round of 63. It was an incredible display. And just like we saw with kind of a glimpse of things to come, Justin Thomas shot a 63 that day. Granted, he finished with a 75 on Sunday. But with that 63 at the U.S. Open, it was an indication to all of us that Justin Thomas was ready.
It didn't please Johnny Miller too much, the 1973 champion, because he had a 63 in the final round at Oakmont. The par there was 71. This was the lowest round to par in the U.S. Open. And I know you and Matt are big hitters, and at least you like to think yourself as big hitters. The ball was above the stance of Justin Thomas at the last, so he had to go down the shaft. The wind was from the right. He needed the ball to stop, so he cut it back against the wind, and it was just the 310 yards.
Staggering.
Unbelievable.
Absolutely. And he's 145 pounds wringing wet. When you stand next to Justin Thomas, you look at him, you look at Brooks Koepka and you look at Dustin Johnson, you say, well, yeah, I get it. I see how you can pump it miles. You stand next to Justin Thomas and you just can't work it out. Amazing. Fantastic young player, he really is. Okay, time to move on to major number three in 2017, the 146th Open Championship at Royal Birkdale, where just like the year before, there was no shortage of drama on the final day.
That is two bogeys and three holes for Jordan Spieth.
And it's in. Well done, Jordan Spieth. Gets one of those three shots back. Oh, it's horseshoed. Jordan Spieth drops a shot, goes back to -8.
Jordan Spieth hit it so far right, he took an unplayable, which means a penalty will be applied.
Matt Kuchar now leads the Open Championship. It's very, very good. Almost goes in the hole. What a response from Jordan Spieth.
And it's in. Jordan Spieth once again tied atop an 8-under par. Eagle for Jordan Spieth at 15. He's made it. Matt Kuchar goes to 9-under par.
Another birdie, Jordan Spieth. You are a miracle worker.
Kuch gets to 10-under par.
Another birdie, Jordan Spieth. Unbelievable. Two shots in the lead going down 18.
Jordan Spieth has won his third major championship. He's won the 146th Open.
It was an incredible Open Championship. Jordan entered the final round three shots clear of Matt Kuchar, but found himself a shot behind his fellow American with just five holes to play after a dramatic turn of events at 13. Matt, and you were following him. Just talk us through what happened.
Well, at 13, we were coming off 12, actually, and the crowd had gathered in on the hill, this little slope that we had to walk up to get to 13T. By the time we got there, we couldn't get in front of the players as we traditionally do in order to call the tee shot. So we knew that he had blocked it right. We could tell clearly that it had gone right. And in our headset, our producer, Tebsy, said, "Did you see where that went?" We had no clue where it went other than the fact that it went right. When we got down into the fairway, we could see a gathering below the dune, the ridgeline of the dune, and we did not realize at the time that the reason why those people had gathered there was that the ball had caromed off the right side of the skull of a man that was standing out there and knocked it over the dune, and where those people were gathered were for that man's benefit. There were personnel there to make sure that he was okay. It wasn't until we saw Michael Greller, Jordan's caddy, scurrying up the dune with the bag on that we knew something was going on that side, and then were relayed from the television trucks that they had a camera up there and that, in fact, the ball had been all said and done, had been on that side, and they took a drop out by the trucks. When it was all said and done, the best shot of that hole, I think, was the wedge that he hit just before the green. He had a facing bunker to him, one of those pot bunkers. He had a green that ran away from him and to the left when the hole was cut on the right. And the fact that he made bogey there, when all was said and done, again, I think it was one of the great bogeys that I've ever seen in my life. But it was set up by that little touch wedge and then making the putt. And then from there, of course, glory awaited. But It was really quite a remarkable hole, and you and I'm sure you would agree, it was quite, as it was happening, it was quite confusing to understand exactly what was going on.
Well, the practice range wasn't marked out simply because it really wasn't in play. Nobody could actually hit it that far offline, but once he realised that he could go down there and keep that point between him and the hole, then I think that's a wonderful piece of course management, either from Michael Greller or Jordan Spieth. It was clever stuff by both. It took over 30 minutes to conduct that carry-on from the range all the way to the green. But in the end, it shows the importance, not just of birdies, not just of eagles, but damage limitation as well, because that hole could have been unlucky 13 for Spieth.
When he had the meltdown at the Masters on 12, it was all very rushed, and he just made mistake after mistake, mental mistakes, and it cost him the Masters. Maybe the half hour, in fact, it took so long to play the hole, Ewan, helped him a great deal.
I think it did, but you know, to go through all that for 32 minutes, I think, was the total time it took once he found the ball to go down there, play it, and complete the hole. And let's not forget the up and down from the front right-hand corner. That wasn't too easy either. For me, the shot of the champion was definitely what he did at 14. It's one of the great par threes in the world of golf. After what's happened and how scrambled his mind must have been, I don't care how cool you are in the upper department, he stood on that tee, focused on one thing, and that was the flag back right at 14, and he found it.
You're quite right, Ewan. He showed remarkable character, finishing birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie. What a run that was. And he signed for a 69 in the end, and a 12-under par finish, three clear of the valiant efforts of Matt Kuchar. Let's hear from the 2017 Champion Golfer of the Year, Jordan Spieth.
This is a dream come true for me. This is absolutely a dream come true. I was able to drink a bit of wine out of it when Zach Johnson won it 2 years ago, and a lot of people told me that was bad luck. Started to believe him a bit through about nine holes today. But boy, it feels good to have this in my hands. What an incredible day. Matt, really enjoyed battling with you, buddy. And obviously could have gone to either one of us, and I got the good breaks today. What a great champion Matt Kuchar is, and what a class act. I took about 20 minutes to play one of my shots today. Matt took it in stride, smiled, and there's not many people, I think, that would have done that. And it speaks to the kind of man that you are, and you set a great example for all of us. I'm going to take this back to America, which might upset a few of y'all here. But I'll return it to try and bring it back again. Thank you very much. What an incredible honor.
Matt, with what he went through, do you think there's any other player that could have endured what happened at 13 and then produced what he produced on the home stretch?
You know, it's interesting that he said in his speech that I got the good breaks today. And there's something about great players, if you look across the course of history, they seemingly get these breaks. Yet what it really comes down to is they take advantage of the breaks that they are afforded. You mentioned Augusta National and the disaster for Jordan Spieth at the 12th. The way that he started that final round of the Open was very much one of a disaster. It was just slipping away from Jordan Spieth. And even at 13, clearly, where we talk about him getting up and down for bogey, it still at that point was slipping away from Jordan Spieth. He just turned it on at the 14th, as you was talking about that brilliant tee shot that set up the birdie at the downhill par three. And then from there, he was off to the races. So I think what we saw was there's this magic in great players. There's something about Jordan Spieth that when he faces adversity, it clicks in something in his mental arsenal, and it clicked in on 14, and then it was over from there. If Jordan Spieth can somehow learn to truly channel that, then he could be absolutely remarkable going forward in his career because he is that special a competitor.
Are we lucky, Ewan, to have a young talisman like Jordan Spieth in our world of golf?
Definitely, and especially coming through so early on in his career. From the age of 22, he'd hit the headlines there, and he's managed to keep up that great play over the course of the 3 years since. I think it's very good for the youngsters of the game who are on various different tours. You've got the Canadian tour out there, Latino American, you've got the Asian tour, the Chinese tour, and they will look to Jordan Spieth and think, well, if he can do it in his early 20s, that's our target, that's what we need to aim at. So I think the game's very fortunate to have such a fine player, and more than that, such a fine gentleman.
Yes, and also spare a thought for Matt Kuchar, who as always was gracious in defeat.
Jordan slipped, I got a one-shot lead with five holes to go. I played some good golf from there, and Jordan just turned it on. I mean, he finished like a champion. It was incredible stuff that he put on.
He just paid tribute to you and the way you handled what happened on the 13th. What was that like? You were waiting on the green for 15 minutes for him to eventually make it up there.
We understood the difficulties of it. There was nothing else you could do. It was in a really awkward situation. I took it in stride, nearly made birdie. It was, I think anybody in my situation would have done the same thing. Yeah, it was an amazing bogey that he made. That was might have really saved his day, and he turned it on from there.
And Jim, one last thing: how proud are you of the way that you handled everything? Because you didn't back off at any stage.
Yeah, I certainly would have liked a few more of those putts to drop in. It's always tough finishing second, but I played well, and all I can do is control how I play. Jordan played great and deserved to win.
It was his best major finish, Matt, but can you criticize Kuchar as a player?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they call him here stateside, the sports broadcasters call him a top 10 machine. If you look at the course of his career, the strongest year that he had in overall season performance was in 2010. So the fact that in 2017 he had his best finish in a major championship, many will forget that he shot a 69 on that Sunday up against the heroics of Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth shot a 69. So he is a very consistent player. Do I think that he's capable of winning major championships? Yes. If I had to pick a particular one, it'd probably be Augusta National, which lies before us. But so I don't really think that Matt Kuchar is a player that deserves criticism for the way that he has played. I think that Matt Kuchar deserves praise for the consistency and at times popping up in these major championships, that he's got a game that's capable of contending. But I don't think there's anyone sitting back there and saying he's one of the leading candidates for best player without.
Well, third place finish went to one of Ewan Murray's favourite players, Lee Hao Tong. He had a stunning final round of 63, which saw him finish 6 under par.
I mean, it's incredible for me, you know. I never thought I was going to make a 4 birdie in a row, especially last of 4 holes, not easy, you know. So, quite happy.
Growing up, what did the Open Championship mean to you? How aware of it were you?
It's kind of like a dream come true since I play golf. And since I start, I just want to play major and try to win major. And really happy to see now getting close.
A fine young man, Ewan, speaking in his second language from Chinese, pretty tricky. But he's got a wonderful opportunity now, hasn't he, in the world of golf, coming from China, an emerging nation, and he being the lead figure.
Yes, he also has a lot of pressure on his young shoulders. He was brought up at Lake Malaren, which is on the outskirts of Shanghai. He was coached in the early part of his years by an Irish PGA professional that went over to China to spend a few years there. So his grinding is very good. But as a young man, he's got a bit of fire in there, as we've seen throughout the course of the season. And there's no question about his talent. That was some finish over Saturday and Sunday at Birkdale, 69-63.
And did you think, Ewan, at any point during the week someone might shoot 62?
Well, I'm rather glad you brought that up, because I was doing open radio with, funny enough, the chap alongside us today, Matt.
Young Matt.
Yes, yep. And I had said that with no wind and how wet the course was, how receptive the greens were, that I was a bit worried that 63 was under threat. And I have to tell you, he didn't just scoff at it, he ridiculed me.
On air?
On air.
Matt, your chance to reply.
I don't remember scoffing at Mr. Ewan, but I actually do, in all seriousness. I remember him making that comment. And I remember afterwards, I was dispatched out to actually follow Grace, and watching him handle himself with the same coming down the stretch in accomplishing it at Royal Birkdale, which, again, I reiterate a comment that I made earlier in the program. I know that people will harumph whenever someone does something remarkable. They say, well, that was because. And my comment then and now is, well, you know, every other player in the field had the same opportunity. So celebrate what this man did in firing his 62 and be thankful that we had the opportunity to see history happen.
Yeah, and it was the Saturday that the South African carded that 8 under par round of 62, the lowest ever round by a man in a major championship.
Has it got there? Yes, it has. Yes, it has. And Brandon Grace moves to
3 under par for the championship and 7 under par for the day.
Wow.
History making is on. Birdie number 8 of the day. Here we go. A par required for major championship history for Brandon Grace. 8 under par on a par 70 through 17 holes.
Ball's on its way, and it's a wonderful, wonderful score. Amazing Grace shoots 62 for history at the majors, and the two players embrace. Amazing Grace has shot 62 to break the record of the majors, the 146th Open at Royal Birkdale has come alive.
I had no idea that was, you know, I was about to shoot the lowest round ever in the history of majors. But, you know, it was great. I think it's nice to get in a zone like that where you don't really know what's going on. And my main thing, thinking down the 18th, was not finishing with a bogey, you know, trying to make birdie or par. And, you know, when I got the fly, I thought, you know, I'm making things tough for myself. But I was putting great the whole day, and those two putts to seal the thing was very special.
So when you got over that final putt from 2.5-3 feet, you had no idea you were on the verge of golfing history.
You know, it sounds a bit stupid, but honestly, I didn't. I was just so in the zone and just trying to finish the round. And like I said, you know, it's never nice to finish the round off with a bogey. And then, you know, after I made it, obviously, you know, Zach came up to me and said, you know, what the situation was. And obviously now it makes it even better.
442 major championships, Brandon. Nobody has ever shot 62. So how does that make you
It's
feel?
Awesome. It's awesome. Obviously, I'm going to like it while it lasts. And, you know, something, you know, I'm going to remember forever.
There's been a whole string of 63s in major championship history, Ewan. Do you think that 62 is just going to be the standout score? Because generally speaking, they're tough tests and it's hard to get there.
They are, but, you know, the ball's travelling a long way now. And, of course, if there's no wind and you have a dry golf course, the wind and that dry golf course is the defence of an Open Championship course. I think Birkdale is something we should be very proud of. It's a magnificent golf course. But with no wind, soft greens, it was there for the taking. And the likes of Hai Tong Lee and, of course, Brandon Grace took full advantage.
You had mentioned when Johnny Miller had some comments about the 63 shot by Justin Thomas. When Johnny Miller shot his 63, it was at in 1973 at a course, Oakmont, that, again, was not supposed to allow scores of that nature. It did. In 1974, the U.S. Open went to Wingfoot, and it is remembered as the massacre at Wingfoot because the USGA reacted in kind and set the course up even more difficult. So while with all kidding aside at Shinnecock Hills, it's a course that's tough enough standing alone, I also think that you are not going to see such equity employed in terms of setup. It will be set up as tough, in my view, as any U.S. Open ever. Add that to the fact that it is, as Ewan said, hallowed grounds in a golf course that's tough enough standing alone. I think you're going to see scores much closer to par at Shinnecock Hills, regardless of weather that surrounds it.
Do you like the struggle against par, Ewan?
Now and again. I think if you ask the man in the street, he likes to see birdies. He likes to see excitement, roars, eagles, and the roars that follow these great numbers on the golf course. And then there's the keen students of the game who maybe like to see that par means something. And I agree with Matt, we'll see that for sure at Shinnecock Hills, as we did when Corey Pavin won there and a little later on, Retief Hersen.
And Rory and Rafa finished tied for fourth, Matt, and surely a couple of Ryder Cuppers in about 8 or 9 months' time.
It seems when you're talking about Rafa, for example, you know, finishing with a 200 par 68. Remember, he had a 67 day before. He seems to have one round that gets away in championships. And for him, it was the second round when he shot a 73. But nonetheless, I think what we're seeing with him is we're seeing a player that is maturing on the grandest stage. He's getting comfortable with being there. We know that he has the long game. We know that he can find the delicate touch. I think it's just a matter of time. When it comes to Rory McIlroy, was that not a sneaky, quiet tie for fourth for Rory in a year that otherwise was kind of a shoulder shrug? Here he was once again finishing high in a major championship, just like he did in the one just before it, where, oh, by the way, Rory McIlroy ends up finishing in a tie for fourth in a year that otherwise most people would say would probably be forgettable by comparison for the man from Northern Ireland. So with a final round 67 at that. So, yeah, that was a compelling finish by both.
Matthew Southgate, who had a fine Open Championship when Henrik won. In fact, he was there on the final green to give him a hug. He finished sixth this time.
Yes, great weekend for Matt Southgate, 67 and 65 after opening up with a pair of 72s and not making the cut by an awful lot. So the Open Championship is obviously special to him, as it is to so many players, and a good performance this year after the tie for 12th at Troon.
Now, Ewan, will you run us through the top 10, please?
Well, actually, as you've done the top 10, I'll go outside it because Paul Casey was in a tie for 11th alongside the defending champion, Henrik Stenson. There was a five-way tie for sixth place. Brandon Grace with that brilliant 62 in round three. Brooks Koepka, the new US Open champion. Mark Leishman, Alex Norden, and the aforementioned Matthew Southgate. Into the top five, tie for fourth, Cabrera Bayo and McIlroy. He was five over through eight on the first day. 68, 69, 67 followed, and that was his best finish in a major of 2017. Hai Tong Lee, 69, 63, 274, but rather like the US Open, rather like the Masters at the beginning of the year, it was between two players. Matt Kuchar, 271 for him, but a distant three shots back of Jordan Spieth.
It was, no doubt, though, a fine Open Championship. Now, the 99th edition of the US PGA Championship was the final act of the 2017 major script, with Justin Thomas capping an extraordinary season with his fourth and biggest victory to date at Quail Hollow. The American started the final round two strokes behind leader Kevin Kisner, but recorded a 3-under-par 68 to win by two shots on 8-under-par. And after a dramatic conclusion to events in North Carolina, Thomas was delighted to get his hands on the Wanamaker Trophy.
It was a crazy day. It had to be an unbelievable watching day in terms of spectating and sitting at home watching on TV. I mean, I forget what hole it was. I think walking up to 12 green, there was maybe five of us at 7-under, and I had no idea it was that close. I mean, I kind of thought it was Hideki and I were, you know, at around 7 or 8 or whatever he was, or 6 or 7, and then some other guys, and then I saw P. Reed was playing well. I saw Rick was kind of making a run. I saw Francesco was up there. And then obviously Kiz and Stroud behind us. To see that was kind of crazy. And then that chip in on 13 was probably the most berserk I've ever gone on the golf course. I'm kind of interested to see how I looked for that. But, it was nice. You know, I made hit a bad tee shot on 14, but got out of there with a good par. And then, I hit a good little pitch after a chunk to 5-iron and then just missed the putt on 15. So I played 16, 17, 18 well all week, I felt like. And it wasn't like, I mean, obviously I'm nervous, I want to win, but I was a lot more comfortable and calm than I thought I would be. So just kind of going through those holes knowing that, you know, I've done this a million times. I know that's cliche and everyone says it, but and Jimmy did an unbelievable job of keeping me calm. So felt like it was a great team win for us. This was really cool for this to be my first one and have my dad here. And I know Grandpa was watching at home. I was able to talk to him, and that was pretty cool. It's just a great win for the family, and it's a moment we'll never forget, all of us.
Matt, when Justin Thomas first came out on tour, he's another young kid who smashed the ball miles. We've seen hundreds of those. Did he surprise you with the year that he had?
He did. I don't think anyone saw it coming. When you look at Justin Thomas, I think we're all guilty of the fact that we try to pre-write the script. And the fact that Justin Thomas wasn't a part of anyone's pre-written script of 2017 speaks to itself. Even that weekend, he opened at the PGA Championship over par, a 2-over-par 73, and yet at the end of the day, he finishes on the mark of 8-under-par and 2 clear of the field. And in so doing, Justin Thomas gave us a glimpse of it with that 63 that we discussed in this program, but he emerged also from the shadow of his childhood rival, who had already been anointed on the global stage as a superstar in Jordan Spieth and established his own independent identity as a player, despite his physical scale, can do things that are absolutely remarkable. And now we know that he can do it with the fortitude to close the deal when he has to. It was, I thought, compelling and a great, great win.
And for you, Ewan, did he surprise you a little as well?
No. Rich Beam, my colleague at Sky, we do a lot of the majors and the World Golf Championships. He told me about Justin Thomas before he came onto the tour. He already knew him from way back. And of course, Rich won this FINE Championship 15 years ago and said within 5 years, he'll be a major champion. Well, he beat that quite comfortably, and there's more to come from Thomas. Player of the Year, fantastic golfer.
Yeah, and there was a great moment at the 18th when Jordan was there to greet his friend and welcome him to the major club, Matt.
It was really neat. It speaks to, they call them, Rob, the class of 2011, all these young players. They're more than just these two gents, Ollie Snyder, Jan, and so forth, that are inclusive in that group. But it speaks to where the game is at right now. We heard that when Jordan was making his speech at the end and holding up the claret jug at Royal Birkdale. And then we've seen it time and again where when one of these players, one of these friends that win, they're there to come out and shake their hand or give them a hug or take off their cap and say congratulations. I think it demonstrates that the game is in a great place. Don't doubt for a second that they are fierce competitors and they want to step on the throat of the other if they get the chance. But when it's all said and done, they are there to say, well done. And I think it speaks to the game being in a good place.
And European Tour members, Francesco Molinari, Louis Oosthuizen, and Patrick Reed, obviously, is obviously a PGA Tour member as well, all finished in a tie for second. So they had good weeks, Ewan.
Yes, and a mark for Louis Oosthuizen. He's got the Grand Slam of second places. second in all four majors. And, of course, he has got the Claret Jug from 2010 as well. Highest finish for Molinari in a major championship. There'll be more from Patrick Reed, I'm sure, a major champion of the future.
I wonder, you know, we talk about Justin Thomas, Matt. When we make our predictions a year ago, none of us went for Justin Thomas in any major. I wonder when we get to the end of this show, if you and myself might go for Justin Thomas in 2018, that would be indicative of the leap he's made in world golf. It really will be. Hideki Matsuyama tied for 5th, 11th, 2nd, 14th and 5th in the majors in 2017, Ewan. He is some player.
He is. As I said earlier, he's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders the same way as Haitong Li has, because they're looking for their first major champion from Japan. And we saw what happened to Ryo Ishikawa when he came onto the tour. That pressure proved to be too much. He's still a young man. He still might manage to make it. But right now, Hideki Matsuyama is carrying that flag.
Kevin Kisner was leading for a long time. In the end, he finished inside the top 10. How good a player is he, Matt?
Kevin Kisner is a very good player. Multiple-time winner on the PGA Tour. We saw him win at Colonial this year in a real gutsy performance, overcoming Jordan Spieth, in fact, to get it done. With Kevin Kisner in that particular week, though, started out very strong with rounds of 67 and then ended with 72, 74 to kind of stall at the end. But Kevin Kisner is another one of these players that plays with an almost chip on his shoulder. Again, not very physically large, but capable of getting it out there far enough that he can come into the greens with enough loft that he can hold the shot. But he has this belief, this self-belief, that he is capable of accomplishing great things, and therefore I think he will.
And you're a big fan of Jordan Smith, who was the top Brit at the USPGA Championship.
I am. I'd be very surprised, in fact disappointed, if he didn't make Thomas Bjorn's side for Le Golf National in France. I have a very high regard for his game, his temperament, his all-round ability to be a top professional golfer is exemplary. And I would expect more than two wins, maybe, next year for Jordan Smith, having won the Post-European Open this year as his maiden win.
And perhaps, Matt, it was slightly surprising that it was Jason Day's best finish in a major, 9th of the season.
Well, I mean, if you look at his performance, he had a second round 66, and then he followed it with a 77, kind of an up and down tournament, an up and down championship that represents the up and down year that Jason Day has had. Recently, when he addressed the media, he went through a litany of physical issues that he is facing, from thumb to back to knee and onward. So I think Jason Day at times can be his own worst enemy in terms of where he stands and what he's capable of. We know that he has mad skills. We know that he has the power that he's capable of having. I just think that on a sunny day, he sees a cloud.
Ewan, I know we've done it, but please run us through the top 10.
I will. There was a four-way tie in 9th place. Jason Day, Matt Kuchar, Jordan Smith and Chris Stroud of the United States, who rather fell away, 76 in the final round. Kevin Kisner opened up with a pair of 67s. He was in the lead at that stage. And, you know, you don't get that many chances to win majors. And next time he'll be a little wiser after his weekend of 72-74. He finished in a tie for 7th alongside the Canadian Graham Dillette. Matsuyama and Ricky Fowler. Ricky, of course, has great memories of Quail Hollow, already a winner there on the regular PGA Tour. Three-way tie for 2nd, Reed Oosthuizen and Francesco Molinari. But this was a week where Justin Thomas came out on top.
Matt, your favourite moment from all four majors in 2017?
I would have to go, for me, it'd be a tie between Sergio at 15 and Jordan at 15. Ironically, both at the 15th hole in each of their respective championship marches and the respective courses, Augusta National, of course, and Royal Birkdale, because at both of those holes, I think victory was secured, if not physically, at least mentally. It said, now on this day, fate is smiling upon them. And those would, I have to call it a tie, because those two events are the ones that stand out to me.
Well, I asked Matt for one, he gave me two. Ewan, what about yourself?
It would be the tee shot of Jordan Spieth at 14. I think to come back from what happened in the three quarters of an hour, let's say, before that, and come to one of the toughest par threes. And whereas I accept what Matt's saying about 15, would it have happened if he hadn't had the two at 14? We'll never know. But by a long way, the shot of the year for me is that tee shot at 14.
Well, we do this show every 12 months, and it's top tipping. Every time we get to the show, we look back on the year before and how we fared in trying to pick who was going to win a major championship. So I'll run through them in your absence, Matt. You can just listen and enjoy the litany of mistakes that I come up with now. At the Masters, I went for Rory. Ewan went for Rory. And Bob Bubka went for Rory. So it was a Rory clean sweep. That didn't happen. At the US Open, I went for Jordan Spieth. Ewan went for Dustin Johnson. Bob went for Lee Westwood. Again, strikeout. I went for a Stenson repeat at the Open. Ewan went for Matsuyama. Bob went for Matsuyama. Nothing happening there. And at the USPGA Championship, I went for Rory again. Ewan, Patrick Reed, Bob, Tiger Woods. The Tiger Woods was slightly left field, but maybe this time around at the end of this season, 2018 coming up, maybe Tiger Woods is going to be a runner. What about that, Matt? What do you think?
Tiger's prospects, I don't see Tiger contending in major championships in 2018. I think that the first hurdle for Tiger Woods will be his performance on a golf course that's a regular type of championship golf course, meaning that you've got the overspray from fertilizer and irrigation where the rough is going to be heavy and dense in the first few yards off the fairway. I think he's going to have some challenges in that area that he has to overcome. We saw some question marks in his short game at the kind of hit and giggle that was the Hero World Challenge, but he's obviously one of the greatest of all times, if not the. He'll get it figured out. I think it's just a matter of being down the road a ways.
Okay, well, let's run through who we think are going to be successful in 2018, Ewan, starting with your tip for the Masters.
My tip for the Masters is the same as last year. I cannot think Rory McIlroy is going to enjoy being halfway behind the curtains. I expect him to complete the Grand Slam.
Matt?
Earlier, I was accused of scoffing at Ewan.
Yes,
I may have erupted, but I would never scoff. However, I absolutely agree with the man that I think Rory McIlroy will be the victor at Augusta National. I look at the last time that we saw an appreciative fall off from Rory McIlroy, and it was in 2013. And few remember that in that year, he went through a wholesale change of equipment, just like he did this year, on top of the physical issues that he was dealing with. I think Rory gets it all sorted out in 2018.
And I think if he gets the caddy situation sorted out, the club sorted out, his health sorted out, and he cuts down the mistakes that he makes at Augusta, I'm with you too. I think Rory's going to have a run at Augusta, and it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen this year, it'll happen at some time. So, Rory, get it done in 2018 and put us all out of our misery. Next up, the US Open at Shinnecock Hills, and we've talked about, and you've both alluded to, Ewan, how difficult the course is going to be.
It will be difficult. It will be dry. I think it was the toughest golf course I've ever seen, the year Retief Hursen won his second championship there, having won down Southern Hills in 2001. I think it will take someone who has every single shot in the bag. It will take a lot of patience. And I'm going to go for Tiger Woods.
Oh, it's tremendous.
I'll tell you why, because in 1995, when Corey Pavin won, Woods was a teenager, amateur, and playing in that, and walked in the 14th. Tiger doesn't forget many things. If he's fit, and I have no problems with his short game, because if you've been out of the game for as long as Woods has, that's the first part of the game that's going to go. I have a feeling that Woods is not finished with this yet.
People say we're not bold on this show. That's rubbish. What about you, Matt? Are you scoffing?
I'm scoffing, I have to admit. You know, the interesting thing is, though, if Ewan's on mark with Tiger Woods at least being in contention, and as he says, predicting with a win, can you imagine if Phil Mickelson is able to channel it on that week, and he's able to be in contention as well? It could be one of those all-time greats. However, I'm going to go with the player that has also known success in the U.S. Open, but has demonstrated both the patience and the precision that I think is going to be necessary, inclusive of the short game that will be absolutely critical, in my view, at Shinnecock Hills. I'm going to go with Justin Rose as the victor of the 2018 U.S. Open.
Do you know, I'm gonna endorse you, Justin Rose. I think he's had a wonderful run at the end of this season. He's coming back to his top form. And if it's a ball striker's week, which it will be at Shinnecock, and a man who can unmistake the golf course to death, then I think Justin Rose is your man. So what a fantastic couple of predictions there. Tiger Woods or Justin Rose. That's major number two for the coming season. Then we get to the Open Championship at Carnoustie. And we all know, Ewan, how difficult that can be.
The toughest and the fairest of them all, Carnoustie, no question about that. It's a very difficult one to predict, the Open, because so much depends on what side of the draw you're on. Up in the county of Angus, you're not going to get the weather like we got on the west coast of England last year. There's going to be some breeze up there. And if you get on the right side of the draw, it can be worth as much as four shots over the course of 4 days. I'm going for a successful defence.
Are you?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, you are in bold form this morning, aren't you? You really are. Matthew, to you.
I actually think Carnoustie, all those things that Ewan just described are an element of the golf course, a major element of the golf course, no doubt. It's still, at the end of the day, is a golf course that will reward a player that is capable of power off the tee. Few courses aren't that way, of course, but Carnoustie, when I look across all of the major championship venues for 2018, I think is the one that most stands out to say the player that is capable of hitting it miles off the tee will be most rewarded here. Therefore, I am picking a player that is capable of hitting it miles, and I think it's time for him to step back up on the major stage. I am going with Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson, another player that nobody really fancies. Not. I'm gonna go with somebody. If it's a bad weather week, if it's a really blustery, squally, horrible week at Carnoustie, I'm going to go for a player who's going to break through and win a major for the first time, who I've seen in previous Open Championships in horrible conditions golf his ball to an incredibly high standard, and I think it's about time for Ricky Fowler to step up to the plate. So I'm going to go for Fowler to win the Open Championship at Carnoustie.
I'm glad to see that all this is catching. You're beginning to come out of your shell as
well. Well, I just feel like I've been left behind here, and we've still got one to go. The USPGA Championship at Belrive Country Club in St. Louis, Matt. Who do you fancy for that?
Traditional style golf course. It's going to take a player that plays his shot to particular quadrants, to particular points, A to B to C to success. I am actually going to go with one who seemingly can solve the riddle on multiple courses at that, Jordan Spieth.
So we've got Jordan for the Open from Ewan, Jordan for the PGA from Matt, and your PGA champion, Ewan, looks like?
Well, I'm with Matt Belrive. I remember Nick Price winning there by three from Nick Faldo and three others back in 1992. And it is that type of golf course. So for the same reasons you mentioned this man before, I'm going to mention him now, that the patience, the A to B style of golf, which I think suits his golfing mind, he has the talent to back all that up, Justin Rose.
Justin Rose. And we three espoused about the skills of Justin Thomas, you have not mentioned him for one major championship. Neither the Murray or the Adams has gone for Justin Thomas, and I'm going to go for a Justin successful defence. Thomas, that is. How do you think, Matt?
I'm just wondering why we have to be criticized as you make your pick.
It's just the point. It wasn't now steady. It wasn't criticism. It was just notable. It was notable.
I put Justin in every mix.
What about Belrive? Are you a fan, Matt?
I am a fan. I like the variety of golf courses. Obviously, my favorite style of golf is links because of the nuance and because again, of the riddles that are inherent. But I think it's good to have traditional style golf courses in there as well that are heavily tree lined. It's going to be very dense. If this is the tournament that's going to be played in the height of the summer, they're probably going to get the thunderstorms that come through later on in the day. So it's going to be a soft golf course to boot. So for all those reasons, I just think it's a very different look, and I am looking forward to it.
Three breakthrough major winners in 2017. Ewan, do you think that pattern's going to continue, or do you think it's time for the more established players to come to the fore again?
That's a very difficult question to answer, simply because the chasing pack that are trying to get there have got so much talent. We mentioned Xander Schauffele a little earlier with that fine finish he had in his major in the middle of the year, and what he went on to achieve there. The Tour Championship is just down from the majors as far as the PGA Tour is concerned. That's a big title to have. I would expect the likes of him to move forward. It seems that players who come off the Web.com Tour, the Asian Tour, it seems that when they come off there, they're ready. They don't have to go through a further apprenticeship to go ahead and win. And that's the pressure that's on the players that are at the top right now. It's difficult to get to the top. They tell us it's harder to even stay there. And I think that's never been more true than the way the game is today.
Matt, give me your person most likely to break through for the first time as a major champion next year that we haven't talked about.
Well, we actually did talk about the individual. My most likely candidate to break through at a major level is Ricky Fowler. I do think that he is ready. I think, again, the work that he's done with Butch Harmon has him primed physically. I think it's just a question of connecting the dots in his mind when he's in the time and place to actually close. So my number one pick in that regard would be Ricky Fowler.
And for you, Ewan? I'll give you time to think. I'm going to mention one. I'm going to go John Rahm. I think of all the people that I've seen this year that is just get up, get at it, and go at it without any fear of looking over his shoulder, it's John Rahm. And if anyone's going to break through and win for a major, for me, in 2018, for the first time, it's the Spaniard.
I love the way you never sit on the fence. I mean, he's Rookie of the Year in European Tour. He's also the DP World Champion. And here he is taking the step up, which for him is just a very small one. But what I can tell you in 2018, and I'm not able to give you a young name that can make an impression, but I do know that there's four iconic golf courses for the majors and they will produce four great champions.
We are so looking forward to the 2018 season and, of course, the major championships when they do come around. Matt, thank you very much for the time you spend with us on the Race to Dubai show, and thank you very much for your input. Have a great Christmas and we'll see you early in 2018.
Scoff alert is on. I realize, gents, I cannot wait. Very much looking forward to it. Absolutely agree that the main stages are all ones that are tried and true. And this is the time of year when we long for the golf to come back around again, and the long wait for Augusta National. I'm pleased that we'll be able to be on the walk together. Thank you, too, for the time you gave me.
Thank you very much, Matt. And you and I can see that twinkle in your eye that you'll be really looking forward to the four big ones when we get to them.
I think everyone who plays the game looks forward to the four big ones. My memory of 2017 will be the way Matt dug himself out of that hole with the round of 62. It just showed what a classy individual he is.
He is a class act. We only have classy guests on the Race to Dubai show. That's it for another 12 months in terms of looking ahead and looking back at major championships. We hope you've enjoyed it. Join us next week, where we'll have a special preview of the 2018 Ryder Cup at Le Golf National in Paris. What an occasion that should be. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. And do leave us a review if you're downloading the podcast from iTunes. But until then, from Ewan Murray, Matt Adams, and me, Robert Lee, it's goodbye, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.